The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, you haven't felt safe or welcome in other spaces. That, in a way, energizes to me to be able to think, okay, how could we ensure that we are creating and we are constantly looking to improve upon our welcoming nature and our safe space?
That's Robert Stump, the conductor of the Black Tulip Chorale. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and this is Cut and Paste, St. Louis Public Radio's Arts and Culture podcast. Black Tulip Chorale describes itself as an all-identity choir. In an artistic world where people presenting as male are often sent over to one creative corner and people presenting as female are sent to a different one, Black Tulip Chorale aims to be a place where everyone is welcome and comfortable. The ensemble performs a show on November 16th that highlights the music of LGBTQ people. In this episode of Cut and Paste, we'll hear an in-studio interview with Robert Stump, the conductor. We'll also get a behind-the-scenes listen to the group in rehearsal and hear from three of its members about why the group is so important to them. But to get us started, I asked Robert Stump what makes Black Tulip Chorale different.
So the chorale is a LGBTQIA2+ ensemble for people of all genders, expressions, orientations, and identities. A major distinction would be we don't put people in preconceived notions of where they should sing. If somebody who identifies as female comes through the door, a lot of choirs, oh, you have to be a soprano or an alto. You know, if someone who identifies as a male comes through the door, you have to be a tenor or bass. We don't do that. We've got a number of folks who cross section lines as need be. It's really dependent upon where their voice sits, what's comfortable for them, and what's vocally healthy. There are people who identify as male singing in alto registers, occasionally flipping up to soprano, and there are people who identify as female occasionally swinging down, whacking away in some of the bass parts. And in our ensemble, we have lesbian, gay, trans, bisexual, queer, as well as a number of straight singers who come and participate in the ensemble. So it's really a reaffirmation of people and respect for people and their communities, but also in a way of fostering understanding and social awareness and in many ways social justice.
Is this world of a cappella singing particularly gendered?
It can be. I think there's a lot of times that there are. I think this is I think we're really going to be able to help start be in a vanguard of a new age of openness and welcoming in choral singing. I've gone to a couple of choral festivals where the criterion literally lists, if you're female, you must sing soprano or alto. You are not allowed to sing tenor. There are some schools of thought thinking that, quote unquote, women singing in a low register isn't vocally healthy. Well, I'm not going to get into a pedagogical argument with them. But if it's a difference between having a welcome space where people can actually sing well and be a part of a community, or, just having some archaic rule or declaration of policy, I'll always choose the former. Slamming the door in somebody's face out of some, old, ancient, preconceived notion isn't going to do anybody any good. It's just not how we operate.
So there's a rich tradition of gay men's choruses. Those organizations have been a gathering point for the queer community over the years in different ways. But in terms of membership in the actual performing, that is a very specific category, gay men's chorus.
Yeah.
So that's not an inclusive ensemble or format.
I think that's a fair assessment. As gay men's choruses across the country are trying to break down that wall and be able to create those safe and welcoming places. I think, as you said, the nomenclature itself can be a bit of an obstacle. Just also in a culture. I mean, you've had, I'm a cisgender white gay male. That in of itself, I have certain experiences. I have certain, life experiences that have helped make who I am. And that can be different from, you know, that's different from, you know, a trans person of color or someone who may be lesbian or bi or, you know, queer questioning or, you know, having identifying as somebody who's genderqueer. I think a number of these ensembles have their own culture, have their own, you know, in gay men's courses. I've been an employee of a couple, you know. There's a culture there that serves their members, gives them a sense of belonging, gives them a sense of identity. But, you know, I think as we can realize that one group's identity may not seem like, well, I can belong there. Maybe people don't feel that that's a place. I don't see myself there. I don't see people like me there. So I may not feel comfortable or safe there. One thing that we really tried to work hard on is making sure that regardless of who walks through the door, that they can see a future for themselves there.
Choir member Grayson Coggins told me about his experience singing in a gay men's chorus and not feeling like he quite fit in.
For me as a trans man, a pansexual trans man, when I was in Gateway Men's Chorus, I always kind of felt like I was invading the space. I always felt like someone would find out I was trans and that they would think I didn't belong or that I wasn't a gay man and would say I didn't belong. But in this space, I feel a lot more comfortable being open with who I am. I was definitely probably hurting my vocal cords and forcing my voice down lower so that people wouldn't hear like those little weird bits of my voice that don't sound inherently cis male.
What have you heard from folks about not feeling safe or comfortable in other ensembles?
I think in those circumstances, my job is to listen to them and let them know that they're heard and let them know that their thoughts and feelings are valid, because it's no one's place to be able to invalidate somebody else's feelings or life experiences. I don't believe in talking down other organizations or other groups. I think we provide something that other organizations can't, and I'm sure other organizations provide things that we don't. So it's a case of, okay, you haven't felt safe or welcome in other spaces. That, in a way, energizes to me to be able to think, okay, how can the Black Tulip Chorale ensure that we are creating and we are constantly looking to improve upon our welcoming nature and our safe space? So, you know, if somebody comes in sharing feelings like that, validate them. That's their life experience, and embrace them, and you know, do your best that you can to make them feel at home, and to help them, just to let them know and share with them that this is their choir as much as anybody else's.
Black Tulip Chorale rehearses at St. Paul Church of Christ in Tower Grove South. I visited there on a Sunday evening, and I love to sing in the shower or alone in the car, but I've never had any training and I don't really know how to do it. But as I watched the group work, it occurred to me that if I ever did get enough training to be able to hold my own in a choir, this would be a great ensemble to learn with and get better. And I don't mean to take away from the talent or professionalism of the singers in the group. But as he sculpts the choir's performance, Robert gives a lot of instruction that these folks can take with them to other groups and other performances. And it feels like a very supportive environment, even when he's kind of digging in and trying to get something fixed. So in this clip, you can hear Robert Stump going over some vowel sounds before moving forward.
When you are sad, arms. When you are glad, okay? Make sure we change all the pronouns to gender-neutral pronouns, as the composer says in the front page. Here we go. Let you cry. Can I ask you stand as you're able, please? Can you give me a forte, a comfortable forte? Don't hurt yourselves. We never sing loud, we sing big, all right? Three.
Let you cry in their arms when you are glad. Let the words of your love be true. But let
Not bad, folks. Have a seat. Let's tune up the bottom of page 3. Okay?
That's a rehearsal with the performance still several weeks away. During a rehearsal break, I ask Black Tulip Chorale members Lindsay Short and Dan Kelly what it feels like for them when they're up there and everything is really coming together.
Your hair stands up on your arms and your head's ringing and all the lights are bright and it's just incredible. And you feel so much. I feel so much love for everybody while it's going on.
And there's just moments where everybody is completely in sync and the room rings with this tone and, you know, you have to not start crying because you have to keep working. But it's amazing. And it's something, you know, something we get to share with the audience.
You're listening to Cut and Paste. We'll be back after this one brief message.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back to Cut and Paste. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and we're talking about the Black Tulip Chorale. We'll talk about the concept behind the group's November concert in a few moments. But first, I asked member Grayson Coggins just if there's a particular song on the program that he's particularly looking forward to.
I really love all the songs we're singing, but my favorite has to be Cornerstone. One of the lyrics is, "The stone that the builders rejected became the cornerstone of a whole new world." And especially when I was first in Gateway Men's, when I felt rejected, that kind of empowered me to feel stronger. As the song has come with me through all the choirs I've been in, it just keeps hitting that same, like, you're stronger, you're getting stronger, you're building this for yourself. And it just means a lot more every single time I sing it. It's a rush. It's like, I can't even describe it. It's like, you had your happiest day ever, and then someone was like, "Hey, here's some free ice cream." It's incredible.
Tell me about the show coming up in November. What's it called?
It's called Our Song. It's 500 years, celebrating 500 years of LGBTQIA2+ music. So ranging things from the 16th century all the way up to the 21st century.
Tell me about the theme. What gets a song onto the list here?
That was theme that I had been working on for a previous group I had was conducting. And I just took it along with me and thinking, in a way, working with a group like this widens the amount of stuff you can do. We wanted to make sure that there were, a lot of the music published that they, you know, quote unquote, gay composers are cisgender white men. Obviously some of those pieces like Leonard Bernstein, Samuel Barber, Peter Tchaikovsky are there. But we also wanted to make sure that we had representation from various identities, orientations, expressions, as well as ethnic backgrounds. We have pieces from 5 continents in 5 languages. A couple of them are arias. One that's, I think it's hilarious, is called The Passive Aggressive Guide to Mother Goose. A composer in Chicago.
That's a fairly recent piece.
Yeah, just the past few years. And Caitlin Van Buren, one of our altos, she's going to be singing 2 of the pieces from. One of them is called "Little Miss Muffet is a Hipster." So you get just by the title, you can tell that there, you know, Russ has taken five of those pieces and you know, kind of messed them around with a bit.
Are these all composers who identified as LGBTQ going back 500 years?
500 years ago, you're not 400 years, 300 years, 200 years. You're not going to have somebody who's going to stand up and, you know, be marching down the pride,
well,
marching
at least the pride not with the language we use now.
Yeah, but there is specific documentable evidence for everyone that we've included. One piece that was not written by an LGBT composer was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but it has become such an iconic song in our community. We're closing the concert with it. Yeah, there's some pop and lighter stuff. Melissa Etheridge's Come to My Window. One of our great soloists, Lindsay Short, is going to be singing that.
You don't know how far I'd go to ease this precious ache. You don't know how much I'd give or how much I can take just to reach you, just to reach you.
Are there other choirs with this kind of membership, all totally inclusive?
Well, I think there are. I think there are a large, I'm just going to use the word gay gay mixed chorus in the Twin Cities called One Voice. Mixed meaning soprano, alto, tenor, bass. Gateway Men's Chorus is a tenor, baritone, bass chorus. In the world of choral music, we're getting away from calling them women's choirs and men's choirs. We're getting to the point of calling them treble choirs and tenor bass choirs or lower voice choirs or any number of different monikers. I know that's maybe a bit clunky, but it's a conversation within the choral conducting world about how we're going to name things, how we're going to refer to things to be more inclusive. And in a way, it's almost more accurate. I've had some conversation with colleagues that you know, teach high school. I'm having a problem with my women's choir. I have this guy with an unchanged voice. You know, what do I do with him? You know, and somebody said, well, just stick him in your women's choir. And I was like, hold on. Maybe you want to take a look not calling that a women's choir because, you know, somebody's identity is core to who they are. And if you've got a young guy who gets put in the women's chorus, are they going to face bullying? Are they going to face harassment from the men in the choir? I did some coaching with a high school choir last year. There was a trans girl who sang bass, you know, and it was the men's choir. She had to leave with it. You could just tell by the look on her face. She was just in agony because that's not who she is. So
about,
you know,
performing with the men's choir,
being placed in that group with the attire, with the name of that group, you know, and a couple of minor changes. What real damage are you going to do making a couple minor changes? Changes the name of an ensemble from women's choir to treble choir.
So this is a broader conversation happening in the choral community.
Yeah, it's happening a lot in music education circles. Recently. I mean, it's been in the past 5 years. It's just mushroomed, you know. And it's in some ways it's a bit of a contentious issue with some people, and unfortunately, a lot of times students, especially students in these communities, get caught in the middle, and then you know, they become unserved, they become marginalized. And it, in some ways, can just, you know, become a downward spiral. Having a little bit of care, a little bit of foresight can solve a lot of the problems we've got. Just how we name our groups can be one of them.
That was Robert Stump. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, and this has been Cut and Paste, produced with help from our executive editor, Shula Newman. You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.